There's a big discussion about why we read Megillat Rut on Shavuot. By no means a simple question. Abu Draham, one of the Spanish Rishonim, suggests two reasons. The first reason he gives is because it's the time of Katsir, when you cut the crops, and that's what's described, the time when Megillat Rut takes place. The Levush, one of the Pirushim on the Shulchan Aruch, adds that Boaz was Mekayim, the mitzvah of Leket, that he let Ruth collect the wheat in his field. And that mitzvah is written next to Chag Shavuot. So again, the concept of the Katsir being central. The second reason he gives in the first source here is that Ruth was a Giyoret, kind of like the Jewish people at Matan Torah. And therefore, it's an appropriate thing to read. I think that both of these reasons, even if they are reasons, are a little bit hard to fully appreciate. Meaning, often I like to speak about the darshan quotient. I'm sure nobody knows what that means, so I'll explain it. A good darshan can connect anything. And if you ask him, what's the connection between this chair and Parshas Emor? So I'll explain to you the gematria of the chair is Parshas Emor, and you know, just off the top of my head, you know.
Well, you're sitting on the chair giving Parshat
Emor. Right. I'm saying, and I'm sure you've heard Joshot like this, where anything can be connected to anything. And right, sometimes you have to take a step back and ask, are the things really connected more than any random thing can be connected? And my point is, you can definitely find the connection between Rut and Shavuot. It was during the Katsir, Rut was a Giyoret. Shavuot has a lot of Vav in it, and so does Rut. In fact, the Vav tough. Another question. Rut, Shavuot, right? Both Vav Tav, right? Meaning, the question is, how do these reasons, are they so significant? Are we missing the significance? Obviously, we are missing the significance of these reasons and not fully appreciating the centrality of the Katsir, the centrality of what this story has to teach us about Giyur in general, about Shavuot in general. So, I think in this particular case, it's not enough just to mention the reasons. We have to ask ourselves what we're not appreciating about these reasons. And just before your question or comment, I just want to finish this section of the reasons. The Tfuot Shor mentions a third reason that maybe is even more famous, that David died, and therefore we infer was born on Shavuot.
He died on Shavuot, or he was born on Shavuot?
We know that he died, and therefore we assume that he was born, because tzaddikim in ancient times died on the day they were born. Let me just finish the point, which is, what does David have to do with Rut? Because Rut is his great-great-grandmother. Now again, it's true it's mentioned in the end of the book, but the question is, what does this book about his great-great-grandmother teach us about David, who happened to have been born on Shavuot? As it happened, right? I mean, again, the question is, you can find the connection, but what does all this mean? But just to appreciate for a second, if you look at the end of Megillat Rut, which is in the Chamesh Megillot, which is in the end of most Tanakhs, you see that this connection to David is an important part of the story. Because not only in Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Zayin is it mentioned that the baby born to Rut and Boaz is the forefather of David, but then there's a lengthy description of it in Pasuk Yud Chet Non. We go back to Paretz, the son of Yehuda. We work our way all the way through the generations until we get to David. So the idea that the Megillah would be read because of David is a fair thing to say, because the Megillah itself emphasizes how Rut is connected to David. We don't yet appreciate why that's significant and why, but the explanation is one that makes sense. And the reason I wanted to begin with this is because hopefully these explanations can key us into what we should be looking to appreciate when we learn the Megillah, what we should be looking to understand about the significance of the Katsir, about the Giyur of Rut, about the connection to David. And so obviously, we need to learn the Megillah in order to appreciate these reasons, but hopefully if we know the reasons before we learn the Megillah, when we learn the Megillah, we will appreciate these reasons. Okay, yes?
No, it's not a question. I read a thing yesterday in something with Moritz Steinschneider, quoting somebody else, who said that the text is often a pretext for commentary.
Meaning, if I'm understanding correctly, that sometimes people use the text as basis for saying their ideas without really trying to explain the text.
No, he was saying that the commentaries were well developed, but that the connection between the text and the commentary is often tenuous.
And that's even stranger, because it's one thing where you're giving a reason why we read something that's not central. It's another thing where you supposedly are explaining the thing and the text isn't central, right?
That's because you're talking about the darshan portion.
Right. So about that. Right. I think it's a little bit frustrating for people, because when people learn Torah, they want to feel that they're learning the real thing. And when relationships are tenuous,
right,
and sometimes you can hear two speakers say exactly the opposite thing, not different, but exactly the opposite thing, which, you know, maybe shows you that what neither is saying is really what's based there.
Well, it can be both.
Definitely can be, that's why I said maybe. But very often it's indicative of the fact that both of the linkages are tenuous, which is a nice word.
Nachama Leibovich once taught us, she asked, said, can there be a question that has answers, two answers that are 100% true? You know, both. And so she said, if you ask someone, why do the cars stop on Yom HaZikaron when the siren goes? So one will give you a historical explanation, one will give you a technical explanation. Somebody puts their foot on the brake and so on. Mm-hmm. She says they're both 100% true, but they have nothing to do with each other.
Okay. So let's start learning the Megillah. Perek Aleph begins in a way that I think is surprising. Let's take a look at it together. Vayhi bimei Shvot HaShoftim, Vayhi Ra'av Baretz, Vayelech ish mi beit lechem Yehuda lagur b'stei Moav, Hu v'yishto shnei vanav. Who is the central character in the story?
The Ish.
The Ish, right? It's talking about a person with his family. Okay. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech. V'shem ishto Naami, v'shem shnei vanav Machlon v'chilyon Efratim, mi beit lechem Yehuda, v'yavo stei Moav v'yiyusham. First of all, the interesting thing here is that we begin by telling you a story without names, and then we put the names in. Why would we do it that way?
Well, like Shmot.
Sorry?
It could be anybody.
Right. We want to present it as representative of a broader phenomenon, right? Mm-hmm. So we talk about it in general, then we tell you the particular names of these people, because I guess the particulars are important as well. What's the significance of the names? Elimelech? What does it imply?
One person.
Important, right? Naomi? Sweet.
Name,
sweet, right? Machlon and Chilion. Those are strange names to give your kids, right?
Yeah.
Now again, it's kind of like, who would name their son Hevel? Now you wonder, you know, what came first, the chicken or the air? Meaning, was he named Hevel because Hevel meant something else, and then he just ends up representing futility because he got nowhere? Or, meaning, Machlon and Chilion. I'm not going to be surprised by what happens to them, right? Okay, so again, we have this presentation of a family. Now, here comes the surprise. Vayamat Elimelech Ishnami, Vatishaher Hiyu Shnei Vanav. Now, this is surprising because I thought the story was about him. And suddenly, in the third pasuk, he disappears. I remember once, there was a movie called Air Force One. I don't know if anyone saw it. Harrison Ford, he's the president. This plane is taken over by terrorists. If you look at the billing for the movie, it's Air Force One, Harrison Ford, and Steven Seagal. Steven Seagal was a famous actor, karate, da-da-da-da. So he is sent up to retake the plane in the first 7 minutes of the movie. He's sent up, he gets on the plane, the terrorists push him off.
The end of his character.
Wait a second. And then you're assuming he's going to come back, meaning he landed on another plane, and, you know, because he's a tough guy. And you're waiting the whole movie for him to come back because he's the star, right? But he never comes back. He's done. Again, I assume, you know, his contract wasn't enough. He agreed to 2 minutes in the movie. They put his name on and finished. But that's kind of like the surprise you have here. Meaning, we start a story about someone, and that someone is gone.
But this someone throughout the whole Megillat Ruth, because of his importance in going back.
Elimelech?
Yeah, because she goes back to Beit Lechem. This is Elimelech's wife.
Meaning, definitely she continues to live in his shadow. But my point is, we as the readers, who don't know yet because we're reading the story,
right,
have to be taken aback and wonder, well, who's left? Or who's the story going to be about?
Well,
and my point is, maybe we as modern readers, like, okay, no problem, he's gone, great. Now, Naomi can live her own life. But as the way the story is presented here, and in biblical times, it definitely is like, so there's no hope, right? So what's going to happen here? I mean, definitely the story begins in a way, and is presented in a way, that we're supposed to feel like, what's going to happen? What's going to be, right? Yeah.
And there's a flip as well, because in Pasuk, I guess it's Gimel, it says Ishnami.
It's not Nami Eshet Elimelech, but Elimelech Ishnami.
Yeah.
Right. Now, when we read about the death here, are we given any information that could conceivably help us understand it? If you're reading the text this way, you know, and you're reading what happened, one could conceivably suggest that his death was a punishment for leaving Israel, right? Leaving Israel in the difficult time. And that's very similar to a suggestion actually made by one of our commentaries in a different context. Anyone remembers who where?
Yosef.
So the good news is you don't cheat. Most students, they cheat. You know, they just look at the next source. So, okay, you know, I guess that's good, right? It's a good thing. The Ramban famously says that when Avram was told by Hashem to go to Israel, and as soon as he got to Israel, what happened?
There was a famine,
and he left and went to Egypt. So many people explain, what's the significance of that story? He did the right thing, and then his wife was taken, and he could have gotten frustrated, and he didn't get frustrated. The Ramban says the test was whether he would leave. And it was wrong for him to leave, and he was punished for leaving. And eventually the Jews had to go down to Egypt. The punishment for Avram having left Israel because of the famine.
Kind of harsh.
Well, I guess one could conceivably say that he should have had faith. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not, who am I to judge? I'm just, the Ramban says it so. But if you're looking for a model of someone who suffered for leaving Israel during a famine, suffered terribly, a good model could be Elimelech, right? So once we know of the notion, I think this could be a good paradigm for what the Ramban is suggesting. Okay, Chazal definitely talk about it that way. They talk about him having been a leader and not wanting to have everyone dependent on him now during the famine and to have to support everyone. And so he picked up and left.
I don't really understand the comments about Abraham, but Elimelech apparently had food. He just didn't want to share it.
That's what Chazal said. We don't see in the text itself, right?
Wasn't Abraham told
Hashem
to go to
Mitzrayim? No. I guess now I can understand it a little bit more, right? Tarif Pasuk Gimel end. Vatishaher hi ushnei vanel. What does the word Vatishaher mean? Interesting that you explained it that way. Literally, the word Vatishaher means
she remained.
Now, you said she... Say it again.
Stayed.
And it could mean that, right? On the simple level, could mean she remained now alive. But it also, I think, is the double entendre, she remained there.
And goes.
Now, their remaining in Moab becomes strengthened in the next pasuk, right? Because what do they do? Do they say, oh man, we shouldn't be here, let's go back?
No,
that's more than, Navi says more than that. They marry Moabites, right? And they continue this settling there. Then it says, "Vayamutu gam shnehem." What does "gam shnehem" mean? It's linking it to the death of Elimelech, meaning they also died. It's not coincidental. This one died, that one died.
They're all connected.
He died. They died as well. And now we focus in on the only remaining character. We started off with the 10 different characters. And movie, 10 little Indians. Vatisha'er ha'isha mishnei liyaladeha umeisha. Now she's totally alone, without her husband and the two children that she had come with. Now again, in that society particularly, for a woman to be widowed from her husband and orphaned from her children, not orphaned, but...
Bereft.
We don't really have a word like that, thank God. But in any case, to be alone without the man who would work and take it, meaning she's in trouble. She really has no hope. And so what does she finally do now?
She leaves.
Why does she leave?
She gets it. That's her only hope.
The Navi says something more than that. Pascal, why does she leave?
That there's no longer Ra'av Ba'aretz.
Ki fakad Hashem et amo. It's much more than that. It doesn't just say there isn't a Ra'av. It says, she hears that, God has remembered her people. He's put the lechem back in Beit Lechem, right? I think it's significant that this is the place we're talking about. God has remembered his people. Oh, so she has hope. She feels part of it. Does she feel part of it?
That's better than what she's got.
That's for sure true, but does she feel part of it?
Probably not.
How does the formulation show that she doesn't feel part of it? Amo, as opposed to?
Ama.
And not latet la lechem, but latet?
Lahem.
Lahem lechem. Now, maybe you disagree with my inferences in this pasuk. So before you disagree with me, let me show you how it's played out in the rest of the following psukim. Because I think it's already implied here, but it's stated much more clearly In what way? How do we hear that Naomi believes there's no hope for her?
Because she tells her daughter.
We hear it in her speaking to her daughters-in-law. We get this whole dialogue. And let's take a look at the dialogue. V'ateitzei min ha'makom asher hayta shama, u'shtei chaloteha ima, v'teilachna v'derech l'shuv al eretz Yehuda. V'tomer Naomi l'shtei chaloteha, lechna shovna isha l'veit ima, Yas Hashem imachem chesed kasher asitem im ha'meitim v'im ha'imadi. You've been good. God should be good to you. Yitein Hashem lechem u'matzana u'mitzena minucha isha beit isha v'tishak lehem v'tisena kolan v'tifkena. Basically, she's kissing them, as we say, goodbye. She's kissing them goodbye. V'tomarna la ki itach nashuv la'amech. No, we're going back to your people. You are part of a people. V'tomer Naomi, shov na v'notai lama telach naimi, ha'od livanim v'me'ai v'ayu lachem l'anashim. I don't understand. A woman, what she wants is to get married. I have no children to give you, so there's no potential yibum here. There's no, you're not going to get married by staying with me. Shov na v'notai lachem, ki zakanti miyot l'ish, ki amarti yesh li tikva. If I would say that I have hope, gam ayiti alay l'ish v'gam yalati vanim. Even if tonight I was to a man and I gave birth to children. Halahen ti saverna, adasher yigdalu, halahen te agena, levil te ayot leish, al v'notai ki marli mod mikem ki yetzavi ad Hashem. Even if I had a child now, how would it help you? Now, does she believe that she has hope, that she's going to have a child now? No, he says, even if I thought I had hope, meaning, I don't think I have hope, but even if I thought I had hope, what, how would that help you? And in fact, then she adds something more than that. Not only don't come with me because I can't help you, but don't come with me because she says more than that. You're right. She says something strong to them. She says, "You being with me makes me feel
bitter."
Wow. Why do you make me feel bitter? You're a reminder to me of everything that's happened to me. I want to forget all this that happened and then move on and suffer alone. Ki marli ma'od mikem. Ki yatzavi ad Hashem. Again, this may be hard for us to understand, right? But if we try to put ourselves in her shoes, I think we can understand it, right? She doesn't hate them. They're not bad people, but they're a reminder to her of everything she's lost. So again, now let's ask the question, is it fair to say she doesn't think she has hope? Yeah. Now comes, I think, the most surprising part of the Sefer. There are a number of surprises here. The first one we began with is the disappearance of the central character. But I think what's more surprising here is that what happens now?
Orpah goes and Ruth stays with
him. Well, the fact that Orpah goes, I don't think is surprising. That is what happens. I think what's surprising is the fact that Ruth decides to stay with her. V'tisena kolan v'tifkena od. V'tishak Orpah l'chamotah. The root davka ba. Now, just to be fair here, is Orpah presented as negative? Do we think Orpah is negative?
No.
Orpah is normal. You're a good person. You're remaining loyal. You go with your mother-in-law. Your mother-in-law then says, go. They say, no, I want to stay with you. She goes, please, you're making me miserable. Okay, I don't want to make her miserable, right? And in fact, I think that's why Chazal say that Orpah was rewarded. How was she rewarded? For the steps she took with Ruth. This, you know, her descendant Og was able to lord it over the Jewish people. Okay, without getting into the exact relationship and significance of that, the point was, Chazal see her as a person who did the right thing. Ruth is Dafka, but she has this deeper level of commitment, what we might call Lifnim Mishurat Adin, to Naomi. And what's interesting here is it begins with the commitment she feels and the loyalty she feels that can't be, you know, given a shiur to, she'en la shiur, to her relative. But pasuk tetva, v'tomer hinei shavi v'ntech alama. Naomi says to her, your sister-in-law has gone back. V'el aloheha, shuvi achreim v'ntech, go back to your world. V'tomer rut, al tifki'i bi la'azveich l'shuv me'achareich. Don't insult me. Don't hurt me. Ki al asher telchi eilech, uv'asher telini alin. The relationship, the commitment, the loyalty is to her as a person. And by association, Amech Ami Ve'elohayech Elohai. How does Ruth get to the God of Israel?
Through Naomi.
Through the relationship with Naomi. And she's not necessarily saying, I have become inspired about God. She's saying, I'm loyal to you, which means by association, I'm loyal to your people and your God. Which is interesting when we talk about Geirut in our own times. Right? And talk about this as a model of Geirut and as Judaism being part of a relationship with people. And not just some personal spiritual what?
That's after like Nag said, okay, with someone who wants to get married, a Goya wants to get married to a Jew, and she was going to put, you know, without all the whole.
That's a little bit different, because that could be said is about love in a different sense than the relationship between a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law. And I'm not saying that, therefore, anyone who says that Geirut has to include religious elements of relationship with God is wrong. This is also mentioned, but it's interesting to see the relationship between the ideas and the order. The next part that goes even further. Ba'asher tamuti amut, v'sham ekaver. Sounds a little like the pharaohs in Egypt, no? Again, the question is whether v'sham ekaver after I die or not, right? Ba'asher tamuti amut, meaning the phrase, let's continue the next. Ko yasa Hashem li v'chol yosif ki amavet yafrid b'ni uvenech. You can ask people, what is the source for the concept till death do us part?
There it is.
Do women. No, more than that. A mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. Ki ha-mavet yafrid b'ni uvenech. I mean, Hashem, when your sons get married, at the wedding, at the offer, if you can say, till death do us part. I won't have a look at you like you're crazy. You should say, I'm not saying something crazy. It's not inappropriate. So Naomi is now inspired by Ruth and says, hey, come with me, it's going to be great.
Get buried with your mother-in-law.
Is this what happens now? What am I going to do, right? She's a lunatic. She turns and walks away. You know, follow, the stray dog's going to follow. She's going to follow. I did my best, you know, I tried to care for you. I'm not going to shoot you. What I'm trying to say is Naomi doesn't, she's not inspired by Ruth. Vatelachna shtehem adbona beit lachem. Vahi kevona beit lachem. Vatehom kol ha'ir lehem. Vatomar hazot Naomi. So she says, it's true, I've had a low period, but I'm going to bounce back. Vatomar lehen. Al tekrena li Naomi. Karena li mara. Ki heimar shadai li mod. Again, in case you weren't convinced by the way she spoke to her daughter-in-law about the fact that she sees things as hopeless, this definitely reinforces that impression. Call me Mar. Now, I don't think she's complaining about God. She's just attributing what's happened to her to God. Anim le'a alachti v'reka meshivani Hashem lama tikrenan li nomi v'Hashem anabi v'shedai rali. So, one can say that Perek Aleph describes a tragedy. A tragedy that at least Naomi, who's the central character, sees as irreversible. That I think is very important. It's one thing when a person suffers. It's another thing when a person thinks they have no hope. And definitely here, Naomi sees herself as hopeless. It's interesting to see how the parak ends, though. V'atashav Naomi v'ruta mo'egach halata ima ha'shavah mistei mo'av. That's kind of like a summary. V'heim abao beit lachem. B'tchilat k'tzir so'im. Now this was the point we heard earlier from the Avudraham, right? And here we see that it's being highlighted, that it's the time of k'tzir. What's the significance that it's the time of k'tzir? One can say, based as we saw earlier, that it's just, we mentioned earlier that it's the k'tzir. Why is it important for us to know that it's the k'tzir, that it's the time of the k'tzir? One can also say on a technical level, the next perek is about the k'tzir, right? So we need to know that it's going on, although I don't think any of us would have found it surprising if the next parak would have described Katsir going on without us having said that it's the time of the Katsir, right? We weren't told it's the time of the Katsir. How could there be a Katsir going on? Maybe, therefore, one can suggest that there's an implication of it being the time of the Katsir. There's a subliminal message we're supposed to be hearing here. Anyone? You don't have to say what I think, but I think Katsir is the time of great hope. It's a time of the, you know, again, now, today in today's world, we don't appreciate the katsir. Let me just finish the point, because there's food all the time, right? This katsir, it isn't katsir. You have to remember, in the old days, you know how there aren't oranges until it's orange season?
Right.
Imagine there's no food until orange season. I don't mean there's no food, but I mean there's very little food. You're surviving off whatever's left and eating, you know, whatever berries you can find. All of a sudden, there's all this wheat and it's being harvested. So that is a time of great joy. That's why I think once upon a time in the kibbutzim, they celebrated the time of the katsir, right? That's when the Chag HaKatzir, Shavuot, they had dances, etc. And it kind of dissipated. Again, you could say everything dissipated. But I think also it's hard for people to be excited about the abundance when there's an abundance all the time. I think in the 1950s, before you know people imported in such great scope, when until your wheat grew, you were living off the wheat of last year. And now there was this huge abundant harvest. So again, imagine what it was then. It's Tchilat Katsir Sorim. It's a time of great hope and plenty and presence. And so as the reader, we're being told this, and we're being told there is hope. There is something positive going on. Okay, yes, what did you want to say?
No, I just wanted to ask you, but the time of Katsir, isn't it between Pesach and Shavuot, it's a time of anxiety, because they're waiting to see if there's going to be a Katsir, and they just had Ra.
So maybe this was after the anxiety, because they're already doing the Katsir. Mm-hmm. And I think, to get back to that Pesach and Shavuot thing, I think there is a nervousness, but there is also an excitement, right? Because the wheat is there. We're not. It's like the excitement of things are working out, but we haven't yet cashed it in yet. Okay, so you're nervous until you... Okay. So let's see now Perek Bet. The first thing we're told in Perek Bet is that Naomi has an acquaintance, a modal ish, someone she's known to, who's an ish gibor chayil. That's good, right? Mm-hmm. Ish gibor chayil, mi mishpachat Elimelech, ushmo Boaz. Why are we told this piece of information? Why are we told it now?
Because that's who she's going to.
Okay, to tell the story without knowing that she's a relation of Naomi, right? Couldn't tell the story without that. Oh, no, she doesn't go because of this. No, she doesn't go because of this. Why are we told this piece of information?
That all is not her place.
Well, the fact that there is someone there doesn't necessarily automatically. I think we're told this piece of information so that when we meet him, we should realize that
he's a
significant person, and B, someone who has some relationship. If she would have gone for that reason, of course we would have understood why we're being told that, but she doesn't. We're given this information, so we have it in our head, so that when we bump into him, we understand the significance of it. And I'll soon show you what I mean by that in two psukim. It's Ruta Moaviah says to Naomi, this is Naomi's town. Does Naomi say to Ruth, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to go down to the local bank, you're going to ask for food stamps. What does Naomi do to initiate to take care of their survival?
She goes to Boaz.
Nothing. Who initiates? Betoma Ruta Moivial Naomi. Why does Naomi not initiate? If I had to guess, she's giving up hope. Betoma Ruta Moivial Naomi. El Chana Sadeh. Va'alaktava Shibolim. Achar Sharon Tzachain Be'enav. Betoma Lalachiviti. Let me go collect it. Maybe someone will take a liking to me. Vatelech v'tavo v'talaket b'sadeh acharei hakotzim. Vayiker mikreha. What does that mean, vayiker mikreha?
It happened.
She chances upon the field of Boaz. It says the fairest she chanced upon the field of Boaz. Now, when the Tanakh says that she chanced upon, does it want you to think that she actually chanced upon?
Mm-hmm.
And very often when we tell the story that way, we often add the word, I happened to chance upon.
Right.
Right. Now, again, one could really consider it that way, but generally we tell it that way when it's not something that would naturally happen by chance. It's something that is, we're expecting the listener, the reader, to say, wow, did that really happen by chance? That she happens now. Again, if we don't know who Boaz is, then it really is by chance. But once we know who Boaz is, so we see it as significant that she's in Boaz's field. So we ask ourselves, is it chance? Or is there someone making sure that things will work out, right? Boaz Bami Beit Lechem. I mean, he's not always in his field. He happens to be coming to the field right then.
But it also adds at the end of the last pasuk, it says Asher Mishpacha.
It reminds you of that point.
It's underlined.
It reminds that point, in case you've forgotten the last two pasukim, right? V'hinei Boaz Bami Beit Lechem. V'yomer Lekotzurim Hashem Imachem. V'yomer Lo Yivarechach Hashem. Now this is very strange, because how many times in Tanakh do we find that we're told how people greeted each other? And that we're told that they greeted each other with the name of God. Now, in case you don't see this as significant, we can take a look at the bottom of page 1, where the Mishnah in Brachot says that there was a special takana made by the rabbis that a person should say hello to his friend using the name of God. Now, that's a special takana because we're not supposed to use the name of God, right? As Rashi explains, we don't see it as a zilzal in the honor of God, because to use the name of God to greet people is using the name of God for a good purpose, to greet people, to show kavod abriot. Where do we learn it from? That you should greet people with the name of God. Yeah. First source quoted is, boom. Mm. Now again, why? Is it coincidental? Is it some limud within a sefer that has nothing to do with what's being spoken about? How can we understand this limud in light of the context of Megillat Rut, of what's going on right now? Basically, what's Boaz saying? God is with us. God is with you. Who are we meant to be thinking God is with?
Everybody.
For sure. And in this local specific case, Rut. Right? God is with you. Boaz is a person who sees God's place, and Ruth is a person who has hope. We don't necessarily know if it's because she believes God will help, but we're meant to believe that it's not by chance that she chances upon this field, right? That someone is with her, making sure it happens, and the juxtaposition is interesting here. So then Boaz, after greeting with God, Boaz says to his servant, well, who is this person? Who is this girl? He takes notice of her. And how does he identify Ruth? Anara Movia, like the daughters of Yitro. Ish Mitzri, a foreigner who came back with Naomi. And she asked if she could collect it, and she's been collecting the whole day. Pasachet, Boaz addresses Ruth. He says, I've heard. Al telchilo kopesadecher. Vigam lo ta'avori mize. Viko tidbakin im na'arotai. Basically, what does he say to Ruth?
Stay here and stick to my girls.
Stick to my boys.
Now,
why is that word significant? Tidbakin.
Because she stuck
with Naomi, was loyal. And now he's telling her to show that same loyalty, in essence showing loyalty to her, that, you know, you can stay with us because we'll take care of you. When you're thirsty, you can drink from our vessels. She herself views herself in what way? I'm a foreigner. Nachri means a foreigner who doesn't deserve. I think, you know, the way you said it, it's putting the whole overtones of the religious thing. You know, and I don't think that's the central thing. And as I was saying before, it's about loyalty and relationships and belonging or not belonging. That's interesting because that was a word we were taught as kids, right? They don't use that word nefrat, right? No, I assume that. I don't want to criticize you. I'm talking about the change in cultures. Why don't we hear the word shiksa and nefrat?
There aren't too many.
Because there aren't any shiksas. And that's the point. What?
We have plenty.
You have plenty of shiksas here? Nefrat?
Yeah, shiksas. Friends are bring to shul all the time.
I mean, that's different. That's different. That's not a shiksa. No, meaning, just to explain for the record, meaning a shiksa was, you know, dafka, someone who's very attractive, and a girl that the culture is, you know, building up as someone who you should pay attention to. So how do we tell nice young Jewish boys they shouldn't be paying attention to that girl? She's a shiksa. Now, you know, I have anything against a 40-year-old Filipino. I have nothing against her, but I'm saying a person who is a public worker in the society who isn't glorified as the girl you should marry by the press, right, is not someone who you use the word shiksa for. But the reason you don't have shiksas in the front, thus the word is not known, because we live in a world amongst Jews. We live in a world amongst Jews. We have to appreciate that. We don't need to and aren't faced with the challenges of, at least not in the same way, of the girl down the block who, why shouldn't I be friendly with her and go out for pizza with her? Let's to the kosher pizza store. Because, what are you talking about? It's crazy. Right? Again, where does the word come from?
Shikuts.
It's just interesting to realize what's being said in that word, right?
What is shikuts?
Disgusting. It's a word used about eating bugs. Sheketzem, right? That's interesting. You know, what does that mean? What are we saying about people? That's a different conversation. But in any case, that's not what she said about herself. She said, I'm a foreigner. Vayan Boaz vayomer la. Hugeid hu gadli kol asher asit et chamotech. Acharei moti sheikh. Vatazvi avich v'amech v'eretz moladetech. What does he not mention? Your God. Because it's not about that. The God was seen as part of a broader national identity. Vatelchi el amesher lo yadat moshel shom. Yishalem Hashem paalech. Utihi maskurteich shneima meim Hashem elokei Yisrael asher bat lachso tachak knafav. What impression do we get of Boaz? A good one, okay. And more specifically? He appreciates a person's show of loyalty. And he himself responds to that loyalty with loyalty. And maybe without, let's say we didn't know the story, maybe we're already starting to feel
a little interest.
Interesting.
This is a guy who fits with Ruth, right? Mm-hmm. These two people go together. They have similar values. Now what's interesting about the phrase in the end of Pasuk Yudbet is that maybe the one Pasuk we just read, maybe we don't recognize it.
It's Abraham.
What?
It's like Abraham. Lech lecha
me'atzecha. Well, that's the beginning for sure. For sure. The beginning of Pasuk Yudbet is definitely, I think, echoes of Abraham. And the willingness to abandon, right? And if you look at page 2, in case you're not convinced that I definitely agree, I already put it on the sheet here in the top of page 2, so definitely I intended it, right? You see the similar formulation by Avraham, right? But I think the end of the pasuk is also significant. We know we have a special mitzvah to love the ger. Mm-hmm. There's a general mitzvah after the rest, but there's an added mitzvah to love the ger. And the Rambam explains why. The Rambam says, Avat ager sheba v'nichnas tachat kanfei ha-shechina, that chooses to come and identify shtei mitzvot aseh, achat mipnei shu b'chlal reim, one because he's after recha kamocha, v'achat mipnei shu ger. Where does this concept of someone who chooses to come and enter under the Shechina come from? Sheba v'nichnas tachat kanfei ha-shechina. Well, let's read the pasuk again, the end of pasuk Yudbet. Tehi maskutech shleima miyim Hashem Elokei Yisrael, asher bat lachsot tachat knafav. That you've chosen to come and protect yourself under his wings. Like we would say today, to enter under his wings. The Rambam basically paraphrases Boaz in trying to explain why the Torah has this special mitzvah to love the ger. Okay, so Ruth had a good day, no? And she says, wow, you've given me consolation. And Boaz says, please take food, bring home food, you shouldn't come home empty-handed. She comes home with full bags of groceries. She comes home to the city, she sees her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law sees what she's collected. And her mother-in-law says to her, where did you collect? What did you do? Whoever you saw should be blessed. And she says, the end of Pasuk Yutet, Vatageid lechamota at asher astayimo. She tells her the story. Vatomer, Shem ha'ish asher asiti imo hayom. You see the climax? Mi hu ze v'ye zehu. Ish Hashem lo libo lasot ra, ha'ish ha'ra hazeh. Meaning, to build up, the climax is the name. Now why is the name the climax? Why does the Navi present the name as the climax? Because that's the point. Because what does that point show, beyond the fact that someone was nice to her? What is the relative significance of that? What's the significance of that? What difference does it make that it was someone random who was nice to her, or her relative who was nice to her?
Sets a scene for further.
So, in case you shouldn't think it's me who's saying it, let's look at Pasuk Chaf. Vatomer Naomi lechalata. How did she respond? Baruch Hu LaHashem Eshelo Azav Chasdo Et Hachayim Ve'et Hamitim. What does she realize?
That Hashem's with her.
How does she know Hashem is with her?
Because
he got it root to Boaz. She realized if she had gone and come upon chance upon some random person, you could say, okay, he's bumped into a good Samaritan. She realized, no, this is not by chance. And this is even more inspiring. Because if a person feels they got lucky, okay, so I got lucky. But if a person realizes that they didn't get lucky, that Hashem helped them, so that's even more important. And that's the importance of Sukkot. Every culture has a Thanksgiving. They give thanks for what they have. The difference between giving thanks in a secular way for what you have and giving thanks in a religious way is that as religious people, we believe that what we have is not by chance, but comes from Hashem. And that's why the Simcha of Sukkot is Usmachtem Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem. And that's why the Simcha is deeper, because we're happy not only for what we have, but we're happy for what it symbolizes, because that we have that relationship with God, which is A, means we'll be Mir Tashem, successful in the future, and B, it means more than that, right? When a company celebrates their successes in the past year. So on the one hand, they're celebrating. On the other hand, they're nervous because they're, are we going to be able to repeat it? Are we going to be successful in the future? But if you believe that Hashem is with you, so that's tremendous, right? So this is more inspiring than just having wheat. Baruch Hu Hashem, asher lo azav et chasdo et hamitim et hachayim. What's interesting is it's very similar to the words Rut Naomi used in addressing Rut. and Naomi. If we go back for a second to Perek Aleph. Perek Aleph, Pasuk, Chet. Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, go home. Yas Hashem Yimachem Chesed Kasher Asitem Imamitim Yimadi. God should be nice to you, do chesed to you, as you did chesed to me, to the dead and to the living. And now she sees God as being the same way. And she explains to Rut, in case you don't accept my explanation, the end of Pasuk Chaf, Tator la Naomi, Karov la Noesh Migo Aleinu Hu. And this word is added, he's our Redeemer, in the narrow and in the broader sense. Okay? And Ruth says, indeed, he told me to stick with the kids, and you know that he wants to continue the relationship. And she does that, Pasuk of Gimel. Hatidvak ben Aarot, Boaz Lakeit, Ad Klot, Ktsir, Haseorim. She stays with him till the end of the collector days. All right. So this is really, I guess, part two of the story. Each parak here is its own story. Part one was the tragedy and the hopelessness. Part two is really the turning point, the hope. And now comes part three. Oh, yes.
From the way the story runs, she picked the field and didn't know it was Boaz's.
Correct.
So that's also another thing, because he comes after and she reports it's Boaz who
right.
did it. But she picked the field. I mean,
she didn't realize the significance of it being Boaz. She had no reason to realize it. Right? We realize it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The way it's built.
It's right. It's definitely built. Mm-hmm. Perek Gimel. Naomi now takes initiative. Why does she take initiative now? She believes, right? She's back in action, right? What's her suggestion to Ruth? Was it fair to call this a bold suggestion? Basically, not only go and propose to Boaz, but I would say an indecent proposal to Boaz. Again, it's part of something very decent and upwards, but definitely being done in a very strange way. Why would she suggest such a thing?
Every time I read
when you read this, she realized this is meant to be. This is meant to be. There's a higher force here. Now, sometimes when things are meant to be, we have to make them happen, right? And you can ask any mother who knows that. That's ABCs, right? Once we know it's meant to be, that doesn't mean we wait and let it happen. It means we make it happen.
But why?
In case you needed a source, okay, that's a fair question to ask. What I mean is you know, and again, hard to understand exactly what was going on, what wasn't going on. But my point was, why does she take this kind of initiative, right? I don't mean particularly this way, but the initiative in the first place, let things go in their natural course. And she's not afraid, I mean, why she suggests, I don't know, but she's not afraid to make such a suggestion because she knows it's meant to be. Now, one point is to see Naomi making the suggestion. The next chiddush is Ruth agreeing to it. This is a lot more, you know, embarrassing or whatever you want to call it for Ruth than it is for Naomi, right? But again, this shows Ruth's
obedience.
Okay. This is the one, and we have to make it work. She finishes the suggestion in Pasuk Dalet, Pasuk Hey. Vatomer Eleha, Kol Asher Tomriya Ese. Kol Asher Tomriya Ese. Okay. Ruth goes. First we describe Boaz. He eats, drinks, goes to sleep. And how do we find out that Ruth is there? Often the Torah tells us, the Nevi'im tell us, from the perspective of the person experiencing. It doesn't tell us Ruth went there. It says, Vehi b'chatzi alayla, v'yecharad ha'ish. We don't know why, is he afraid? V'yilafet, v'yinei isha shochevet margalotav. There's a woman there. Anyone remembers another case in Tanakh where it tells us this way? Right? And he takes out the Sefer Zichronot. We're not told Haman is coming, and we hear about it from the king and the surprise that the king finds. Now, the best way for us to be surprised is to not be told. For example, if you're watching a movie, right, and you know you see a person come and knock on the door, and then they show you the person inside the house. They go and they answer the door. That's not a horror movie. A horror movie is a person's walking in your house, all of a sudden, right? Meaning, you know, you're experiencing the shock in the same way the person is, because you didn't know anything was there, right? Now, there's two kinds of denim in horror movies. One is where you know something's about to jump out. That's the fear of the known. That's fear. The other thing is surprise, right? And of course, good horror movies do both, right? You know, the first part is a surprise, and then you know there's more coming, and you're afraid, 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 and all of a sudden there it is. Right. So this is a surprise, and the surprise is intensified by the fact that we're not told until we hear about it from his perspective. Who are you? He says to this mystery woman. Pasuk says, "Vatomer anochi ruta matecha, ufarastach nafecha ala matcha ki
goalata." Somebody didn't realize it when he met her before. It was dark.
It was dark. What does she say to him? Why does she use these words? Spread your wings over me. I'm sorry?
That's what he used.
Let's go back to Pasuk Yud Beis. Yishalem Hashem Paalech Uti Maskotech Shnei Ma'am Yim Hashem Elokei Yisrael Asher Bat Lachso Tachet Kenafav. You describe me as choosing to come under the wings of God, and I'm asking you, Felachta Bedrachav, right? You should act towards me the way you describe me having committed myself to God. And he says, Pasuk Yud, his response, Brucha at Lashem Biti, Heitaft Chasdecha Acharon Min Arishon. Levilti Lechet Achrei HaBachorim Min Dal V'Yemashir. What was her first chesed that he's talking about?
To go with
Naomi. Your level of loyalty, it's one thing to go to your mother-in-law, it's another thing to get married to an old man because your mother-in-law says it's the right thing. And he is talking about her level of appreciation of the right things, of the right values. Of the right values. Where is this midrash? I thought I had it written down the midrash, I didn't. Okay, let's continue. Now what's interesting is even though, you know, she's made this offer to him, he doesn't take her up on it, at least not right away. Why?
Gives her a chance to escape.
No, he says why.
There's somebody else.
So it's about values, right? It's not about getting ahead and taking what you can get, right? And he explains this to her.
On the end of bottom of page 2. I think it's what you're looking for.
You know what's so interesting?
Well, maybe
you're 100% right. On my copy, I don't have it. The reason why is because I must have added it later and not printed it out again. So if you look at the Medrash here, the Medrash says that the Megillah at the root was written not for Tuma, not for Tara, not for Isra, not for Hetz. We don't learn Halachot. Lama nichtava lelamitcha kama sachar tov legomlei chasadim. How much sachar people who do chesed, people who care about other people get. Now I want to make an interesting point here, which is chesed in the context of this Megillah is what? Giving money to a poor person? Which I don't think the Megillah is against. Chesed in the most basic level, and I hope we all know this, is taking care of the people you're responsible for, you're connected to. The loyalty and concern and tipul, because that isn't seen as something that, unfortunately, is not seen as a glorious thing. And Baruch Hashem, we live in a world today where there's communication and a person can take care of so many people and do so many good things. Many, many years ago, chesed, a person's responsibility was take care of their family, right? And that's seen today as selfish or inglorious, or, you know, maybe we live in a world where we have to be out there doing something bigger. Now, again, if you have the capability to do something bigger, that's wonderful. But the first thing is, and you see the usage of chesed in this context here, but looking at Pasuk Yud Gimel, getting back to the Pasuk, Lini halayla, vaya baboker, im yigalech tov yigal, if he'll do it great, v'im lo yachpots legalech, the responsibility, the connection of the geula of what he's going to do to the Ratzon Hashem. You know,
why does he tell her to stay till morning? Like, she made her point.
Oh, well, you should leave now in the middle of the night. Go home.
Yeah, go back. You
can't go home in the middle of the night.
I mean, he's staying
there.
He wasn't
saying, he was saying, go stay over and we'll see you in the morning.
But he stayed there too?
Just as they had been until then. I don't think they did anything
but
naughty.
They didn't know, but they didn't know before. I mean, he didn't know before.
Now that you're not going to send her home at 3 in the morning. I think that's fair. Okay. That's all I can say. If you have something better, I'm happy to hear it. Okay. In any case, what happens in the morning? Part 4. Boaz goes up, finds the goal. What's his name?
Naomi.
No, we do know. Sure. His name is Ploni Almoni. Yeah. That's his name. Why do you say we don't know? Because his name somehow became the name we use to describe people who have no name. His name was Ploni Almoni.
Oh, that was his name?
Yeah, that was his name.
And it didn't mean...
Didn't mean yet Ploni Almoni. Or in other words, the question is, why did we choose his name to mean
right.
Ploni Almoni? Isn't that strange?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with the name Ploni.
Or maybe they don't want to speak Lushanora about him because he didn't take on his...
So I think it's a little more than that. Let's see.
No, he's a nobody.
Let's see.
Let's see.
So he says, you know, we have this woman, she needs to be... No, he says, we have this field, right? That needs to be redeemed, right? The field of Elimelech is lying in waste. What does he say?
Well, what pasuk are you?
Pasuk Dalet now. What does he say? I'll do it. Very important. Let's see. Ani amarti aglaz nechalei mor knei neged yoshvim v'neged zeknei ami intigal gal v'im lo yigal hagid ali veida ki ein zul tchal legov anochi acharecha v'yomer anochi agal. I'll do it. I'll take the field. I'll take care of the field. Because again, in ancient times, it was the Nachala, right? All right. What does Boaz now say? When you take the field, you got to take Ruth with you because she is the wife. Mm-hmm. Meaning, the Yibum is stepping in place, which means, you know, the family and means the Nachala and the connection between the two. Burial used to be not in cemeteries, which are city creations. Burials used to be... on your land, you continued living in the land that your family continued living on. And what does he say now? What? What's the goal's response now?
Wouldn't it be more appropriate to take Nomi as a wife?
Maybe she's not marriageable anymore, she's so old.
But so is he.
I don't know, the goal? I don't know how old the goal is.
No, not the goal, but Boaz.
Well, let's continue. Maybe Nomi felt that Min HaShemayim was supposed to be Ruth because Ruth had chanced upon the field. But let's continue with what we're talking about. What does the Goel say?
The Goel says he doesn't want to.
Why not? He doesn't say he doesn't want to. Okay. He says he can't. Why can't he? I have to take care of my own. I have my own wife, my own family. I can't take this upon myself. Is he a bad guy?
No.
It's funny because in the beginning he could and now he can't.
He could take the field. He couldn't take the wife. What? I guess he felt he didn't have the ability, resources, whatever, etc. He can't. Is he a bad guy?
No.
In fact, you should know, there's a Maimer Chazal which says that his real name was Tov. He's good. But he's not more than good. Who does he remind you of? You know in the Disney movies at the end, they get married, right? Whoever it is, the fish and the swan, the ogre and the woman, they get married. Now, in all Disney movies, there's always these sub-characters. The second line of characters. Why do they have second line of characters? The plate and the clock, right? Or the starfish and the, I don't know, why do they have those second round of characters? To enrich things, right? It shouldn't just be two people, right? And usually in the Disney movies, when the fish marries the swan, at the same time, the plate's marrying the clock, right? In the background, they're already smiling at each other, or they're getting married, also, it's a double ring ceremony, right? There, so, you know. Right? I once heard Jerry Seinfeld say, isn't it funny that the person's called the best man? He's obviously not the best man.
The best man is a cousin.
So why is he the best man? He goes, I'm the second best man. because the reason they wear tuxedos is in case the cousin backs out. There's already backup. They just move. Everyone moves one over. So I think in the Disney movie of Megillat Ruth, when Ruth is marrying Boaz, Ploni Almoni should be marrying Orpah.
Orpah's long gone,
but he doesn't want to marry anybody.
No, I'm saying everyone has to get married. I mean, both of them are good people who do what they're meant to do and nothing more than that. Now. Ploni Almoni is a person who's not ready to take responsibility for ensuring that the name of his relative continue, right?
He couldn't.
I'm not saying why. He's not ready. And therefore his name becomes synonymous with?
Ploni Almoni.
Namelessness. Should I say that all again? Ploni Almoni is not ready to take responsibility, l'hakim shem l'achiv, right? To ensure that his relative's name will continue. And therefore, his name is chosen as the model of namelessness.
Who chose that name?
Not me. I don't know. We don't have a record, you know. I'm a Rebbe. Let's use Pliny Almoni's name.
In Gemara, it's a term.
It is used. It is used, but we don't know who chose it. But I think this is why. yeah. Now let's get back to Boaz. We've been waiting for this moment, right? Boaz steps in. He's wearing a tuxedo, and he was the best man. And marries Ruth. Now this is what we say. They live happily ever after, right? But now we have another scene. That's a strange blessing, right? I mean, we hear it so many times that we take it for granted. Why is it strange? And what about Sarah and Rivka there? Why Dafka Rachel and Leah? Let's continue the pasuk. Asher banu, shtehem et Beit Yisrael. Two women who worked together. Who worked together. Who didn't care only about themselves. And of course we know what Chazal say about both Rachel and Leah. V'hi beitcha kiveit peretz. Asher yodat amal Yehuda min hazera sheiten Hashem lach min hanara hazot. That was the model of Yehuda. They get married. She has a child. They get married. She has a child. And what's interesting is the Megillah ends with who? With who? Well, right now, before that, the story ends with who holding the child?
Naomi.
It comes back to Naomi, and that's why, I mean, the Megillah began with Naomi. But let's take a look at the top of page 3 for a second, the Makor I gave you. Ploni Almoni, Rashi and Ruth says, Ploni Almoni, velo nechtav shmo, we're not given his name, lefi shelo ava ligol, because he didn't want to do the geula. I think it's possible to say his name was Ploni Almoni, and that name becomes that. Rachel and Leah, asher banu shtehem. Right? Here there's a Gemara in Megillah which talks about how Rachel gave Leah the simanim that she shouldn't be embarrassed. Naomi, Pasuk Yudalid, Vatomar na hanashim el Naomi. The women now say to Naomi. When was the last time the women were speaking with Naomi?
Naomi.
Remember they said to her, this is Naomi. And she goes, don't call me Naomi, call me bitter. Mm-hmm. Now the women say to her, Baruch Hashem, who didn't hold back a goel from you. It brought back your life to you. She's like the adoptive mother. There's the hope for her. What do they call the baby? Oved. Interesting name, no? Oved. They call him Oved, not Evid. They call him Oved. Why would you call the baby Oved? What does Oved mean? A worker. Let's take a look at the bottom of page 3. The Yalkut Shimoni says, why do we read Rut on Shavuot? To teach you that the Torah is only given to those who work hard for it. It's through suffering. It's through difficulty. The Mishnah Berurah quotes this as the reason, by the way. And I think this is really representative of the whole story of Rut. We say the phrase, good things come to those who wait. I think this, the motto of Rut is good things come to those who work. Now again, those who believe, no matter where they are, and work towards it. First Rut, then Naomi. And let's see how this comes back around to all the characters that we're dealing with. If you take a look at the bottom of page 3, in Shoftim we're introduced to a Shofet who lived in Beit Lechem. His name was Ivtzan. It says he had 30 sons and 30 daughters.
How many wives?
Don't know. It doesn't say. In any case, Chazal say that Ivtzan was Boaz. And it says, in fact, that he had 30 sons and 30 daughters who all died in his lifetime. Okay. What would one do? I don't want to say you. What do you think one would do in such a situation?
Not have any more
children. Lose hope. In essence, Chazal is saying that Boaz was a similar character to Naomi and Ruth. Lost everyone in his life, but believed in the possibility of continuing on. And worked towards it, right? And I think all this applies in a very special way to David HaMelech, who we said earlier, is one of the reasons given as to why we read the Megillah. Let's take a look at page 4. If you take a look in Sefer Yeshayahu, in Sefer Melachim, you see there that Yeshayahu Navi and Chizkiyah Melech did not get along. Not, it wasn't a personal thing. It was a bad question of, you know, derech. The Gemara in Brachot says that Hashem made Chizkiyah sick to force Yeshayahu to go visit him. Yeah. And when he went to visit him, Chizkiyah said to him, why am I, what did I do wrong? And Yeshayahu says, what you did wrong is that you didn't have children. So Chizkiyah says, well, I didn't have children because I saw the Nevuah that my grandson, my son would be a Rasha. Who is his son?
Menashe.
I don't want to bring Menashe into the world. So Yeshayahu said, very important lesson, that's not your business. You have to do your part, you leave the rest to God. So Chizkiyah said to Yeshayahu, okay, so give me your daughter, I'll marry her, and maybe it'll be a schus. We would say, put your money where your mouth is, right? Yeshayahu said, no, it's too late. You're already destined to die. At this point, when Yeshayahu said that to Chizkiyah, Kfar Nigzer Alecha Gzeira, Chizkiyah speaks to him in a very rough term. He says to him, Ben Amotz. Ben Amotz. Wrap up your nevuah and get out. Kalei nevuot chavetze. Kach mekublani mi beit avi abba. I have a tradition that afilu cherev chada munachat al tzavaro shel adam, al yimna atzmo min arachamim. Even if the guillotine is on your neck, you don't hold yourself back from asking for rachamim. Mi beit avi abba. Who is the great-great-grandfather of Chizkiyahu HaMelech? Rashi says, second source, page 4,
David.
And we see this by David. Because if you remember, after David had the relation with Bathsheba and they had a child, Natan and Avi said the child's going to die. What did David do? Third source, he sat down, he fasted, he prayed. Hashem, the Navi told him he's going to die, no? And then, after he realized that the baby had died, they didn't want to tell him, he got up, he stopped mourning, and his servant said to him, I don't understand, a minute ago you were mourning, now everything's fine. He goes, look, as long as the child was alive, I was crying and begging and davening and hoping, now he's dead. Meaning, as long as he was alive, there's always hope. It's never too late. And I think that this is a central theme in general in Judaism. It's something that when we talk about Chizkiyah getting from his great-great-grandfather David, it's definitely something we see in David's great-great-great-grandmother Rut. And it's important also for accomplishing anything in life, including being able to grow in Torah. The Rambam writes that there are three crowns of glory in the Jewish people: the Kahuna, the Malchut, and the Torah. And the difference is that Kahuna and Malchut are things that have already been given out. Torah, though, is there for anyone who wants to take it, on the one hand. On the other hand, the Rambam writes in Halacha Yud Bet, you only achieve it if you're willing to really commit yourself to it, work hard towards it, and of course, believe that you can accomplish it. And this concept of hope and belief is the basis of getting anything done. And I'm going to give you an example of this. Eov, who definitely had a lot of reasons to be to not have faith, or confidence, uses as an image that he bases his hopelessness on seeing water wearing away rocks. Perek Yudalet Pasuk Yutet, Avanim Shachaku Mayim, stones are worn away by water, Tishtov Shvicheh Afar Aretz, V'tikvat Enosh Avadata. Just like water wears away rocks, so God wears away our hope. It's so interesting to see how Rabbi Akiva saw the same image. In Avot Rabbi Natan, we're told that Rabbi Akiva, we know until 40 he didn't learn, and then all of a sudden he decided he's going to learn, and then the rest is history. It says what inspired him. He saw water wearing away a rock. He said, if water can wear away a rock, then Torah can get into my rock head. Mm-hmm. Again, two people can look at the same image and reach the opposite conclusions. What does it depend upon? Your perspective, your mindset, what you want to see in it, right? Whether you see the cup half full or half empty is the way we talk about it. But I'm also not just talking about whether you see the good or the bad, but whether you see the hope or the hopelessness. I think that's a big part of Megillat Rut, which is central for Kabbalat Torah and being able to accomplish anything in life, and for sure spiritual, religious goals. And maybe that's the side of reading it on Shavuot at the time of Kabbalat Torah and the reasons that we saw in the beginning.